Welcome, folks. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. This is Jeff Bryant, the host of Now We're Talking. In studio, I have with me, as always, Keith Kennedy. And we weren't in last week, according to the podcast. If you listen to the podcast, we weren't here last week. And but we're back.
Yeah.
We're back. And
like Arnold Schwarzenegger in that movie where he says that.
Predator 2.
Mm-hmm.
Was he in Predator 2?
Yeah, no.
Danny Glover was. Who was also in Lethal Weapon 3.
Yep. Also, if I can put this out there, Danny Glover is way better in Predator than Arnold Schwarzenegger is.
Whatever happened to Danny Glover? He's one of those actors who every once in a while I, you know, scope out his IMDb just to make sure that he's still making movies.
That he's alive?
Yeah, that's true, actually. You're right. You caught me. I do first check to see if he's alive.
To see if you got
And then
any,
to see if he's still making
Deadpool?
Movies. Because is that just because I had the perception when I was younger, perhaps due to the Lethal Weapon series, that he was a mainstay A-list actor? Or is there just an ebb and flow to celebrity? I don't know.
I think
Keith, I'll let you take this one.
Okay, good. Yeah, I think he was an A-list actor briefly.
I mean, can you name a movie he's done in the last 15 years?
No, sir.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's Danny Glover.
It's Danny Glover. Even his name I find appealing.
I have no idea, like zero idea, if he had a fantastic career before Lethal Weapon or after. I have no clue.
He definitely was in a series of movies in the 90s that I didn't see, but was at least aware of.
Yeah.
Like Grand Canyon.
Okay, never heard of it.
Never heard of it.
The canyon or the movie.
Yeah, so I don't know what he's been up to.
Well, I think that...
He's one of those actors, I'm like, oh, maybe he's in his 90s or something. And I'm like, no, he's still in his 60s.
Yeah,
it really makes you appreciate actors like, I don't know, like Pacino or De Niro. Obviously, those are extreme examples.
Mm-hmm.
But actors who...
Oh, Michael Caine, Robert Redford.
Yeah, actors who... You still hear about projects they're doing. Although, as soon as I say that, I think about some of the movies that Al Pacino has done and De Niro. And you realize even if you're a legendary actor, you can still only work with what projects are available.
Yeah,
because Al Pacino and De Niro, I mean, I appreciate the fact that they've kind of extended their careers by doing more comedy.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a point at which once the novelty of that wears off, I find, it's no good.
I wonder if it's part of the artistic mentality.
Because they're not actually funny.
Yeah, well, yeah.
You know, are they?
I mean, Pacino can be, I think.
People were so proud of De Niro when he did Analyze This.
Yeah.
And what was the Fockers?
Yeah.
Meet the Parents.
Yeah.
And that's fine. But when they start to do really horrible comedic films where it's kind of counts on them, that's not what they do.
I was going to say, but maybe it's because they're wacky. Like, Pacino's a great example of one of those guys who's like such an artiste. Like he's so wacky. Like it baffles him that he's a star. And he's just a guy who does acting. And I think maybe the older you get and the wackier you are and the more no one tells you to stop it, the more you're going to make strange choices. And so you'll end up just off the charts. Like, if Pacino did anything near to what he used to do, everyone would love it.
Can you imagine if he just decided to retire from acting when he was like 35, having already done The Godfather and Dog Day Afternoon.
One of the greatest of all time.
And Serpico and all these, like, by the age of 35, maybe a little bit later, but by his mid-30s, he, like, time and time again had, like,
well, I think
huge
that's
roles.
An interesting...
And then he did Jack and Jill with Adam Sandler, which I didn't see.
But
looks atrocious.
It's interesting you say that because, in a way, De Niro is, like, destroying his own legacy. But is that a thing?
Yeah.
Can you? Is it really going to hurt De Niro if he keeps, you know, making Gaylord Fokker jokes? Which, by the way, is a one-liner I wrote once for comedy was... Gaylord Fokker. Now I get it.
And what year did you write the joke?
The year before it was made.
Interesting timing.
No, it was a few years ago because, you know, obviously that subtlety in those sorts of movies are sadly lacking.
Gaylord Fokker.
Yeah. And De Niro. I thought De Niro was good for, you know, I mean, he's a great actor. So be like a grumpy old man. Of course you can do that. But it's not the same.
And these are people too, you know. It's like if you kind of take away their humanity and just make them symbols or icons, you put them to this unreasonable standard. But if they're just people who, as they get into their 70s, enjoy making movies and that's kind of what they want to do with their time, and there's not a stack of amazing films for them to do as actors in their 70s, if it's the choice to do Jack and Jill or just kind of sit around the pool all day.
Yeah, maybe you got to work. Yeah. And if De Niro likes comedy, feels better, it doesn't hurt his back as much or something, go for it. And even, I think a casino, this is interesting, because Bill Simmons has a new show on HBO called Any Given Wednesday, and Jonah Hill was just on
Not
it.
Richard Simmons, right? Because I always mix those two
his
up.
His old show's still on.
Okay, good. Thank goodness.
Yeah. But Jonah Hill was on, and he was saying that he thought Casino was a great film, mm-hmm. and that's like a real separator for people. And
some people don't like it?
Yeah, I think some people don't love it as much. Some people group it along with all of De Niro's and Scorsese's best work, and some people don't.
Some people think it's a lesser Goodfellas,
yeah,
I assume?
Yeah, that's a good way of thinking. I remember thinking like that De Niro in that movie is great, but he kind of felt like, when I saw that movie, I went, is he still doing this?
Mm. So, well, especially just the show. I think as a standalone movie, yes, the answer is it's a good movie.
It's an entertaining movie.
I think
within
just a few years after Goodfellas, which is was a huge film, and to have so many of the same cast members.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess the brainwave was not to cast Ray Liotta.
Yeah, and Pesci doing something similar. And
very similar.
And then De Niro doing his thing. And I think it's just funny that now we look back and go, all of these comedies De Niro did afterwards that were like, oh, I wish he would still do that. But when Casino came out, everyone was kind of like, this again?
Right.
Or I shouldn't say everyone, but most of you jerks.
Yeah,
me,
we're on
me
to
included.
You. Yeah.
I thought Casino just felt like a big music video. That's what it felt like. A lot of like iconic sequences with this recognizable music, and like a good movie, but a lesser movie than the movie that it was almost like it was imitating those movies.
Yeah, it felt like somebody ripping off Goodfellas like really well.
Yeah, really well.
Including
like maybe,
using some of the
like
same
Scorsese
songs.
Scorsese himself.
Using some of the same songs. Like Scorsese's known for using Gimme Shelter, song by the Stones, in multiple movies.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of them. And like, you know, combined with slow-mo sequence, voiceover narration,
mm-hmm.
like freeze frame. It's almost comical.
Sharon Stone. She counts as one of those things.
A lot of people don't know that Ray Liotta and Sharon Stone are the same person.
Oh, that explains
a
lot.
If you look up, you'll see they've never been in a movie together.
Well, that's just to be fair, then. That's Ray Liotta's best performance.
It is one of his best performances. He looked good. He looked good for his age.
I also liked him as Ellen Barkin in Sea of Love with Al Pacino.
I remember that movie. Sea of Love, yeah.
I love that movie. I love that song and that movie, so it was like a perfect storm for me.
Wasn't John Goodman in that movie?
Yes. He's without any giveaways, he's important to that movie. He's a main character.
John Goodman's an interesting actor.
I love John Goodman.
He's an actor with a very interesting filmography.
Yeah, and Speed Racer, for example.
What's that?
The Speed Racer movie that came out a few years ago.
He was in it?
He was in that. I hadn't seen him for a while.
Recently he's been in a lot of good quality.
Yeah, he's
films.
In the new Cloverfield sequel.
Yeah, I saw that. He was good in that.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet, but the trailers look good. I love him, man. I used to watch. I'm a big Roseanne guy.
Yeah,
I watched all of Roseanne when I was a kid, and then went back in my like mid 20s in my like staying on the couch and being confused about life phase. Watched the whole series again, like on one of those.
I had that phase last week.
Yeah, nice.
A different show though.
Different strokes.
Similar.
Yeah. Yeah, I watched the whole thing. You know, like it comes in the middle of the day on whatever UPN or something, and they just show like back-to-back Roseanne at 12 o'clock. And this was just before PVR was a big thing. Maybe TiVo had just been invented.
So you taped it on your VHS?
No, I just watched it. I like had nothing better to do than sit there from 12 to 1 every day watching all of Roseanne, two episodes at a time.
Yeah, I mean, not a lot of actors can be a comedic performer in an iconic sitcom and also have huge chops in film for both comedy and drama and like dark comedy.
Yeah.
He's done all that.
And Goodman's one of those guys too. He could have dropped off the radar. Like we could be talking to him as a Danny Glover at this point, and it's his talent.
Poor Danny Glover.
It's his talent that has brought him around. Like John Goodman's so good that people start giving him work again. Like even when Big Lebowski came out, I feel like I hadn't seen him in a little bit. I mean, because remember his heyday, right? He did Babe. Now he wasn't the pig in Babe. Not a fat joke, but he did Babe Ruth.
What was the movie called? The Babe?
Maybe it was, yeah.
I can't remember.
And then he did, I want to say Uncle Buck, that's John Candy. He did the movie where he was the King of England by mistake.
King Ralph.
And then there was a period of time there where he fell off. And I know.
I think actually it's funny you mentioned that the movie was called The Babe, by the way.
Right.
I think that actually was a catalyst for him to take a step back. And because I remember him talking about how he was not pleased with his performance in that movie.
In King Ralph?
In the Babe and also King Ralph as well. I think it was kind of an obvious role to do if he wanted to launch that sort of comedic, launch himself as a comedic figure, you know, off on the
which
heels
he could
of
obviously do way more.
It made sense to do that basically.
Yeah.
I think from like a Hollywood standpoint, it's like, great, he'll be perfect for this and we'll do two more movies and then he'll be done.
Yeah.
But I think that he took a step back from that and, Mm-hmm. You'll see that. You'll see that people are reinventing their careers that way.
Yeah, that's good. I wish I knew his filmography a bit better, because I feel like he's popped up over the years, and I've always been like, hey, it's John Goodman. Or like, if I see a TV show and he's in it, it's very notable. Like, it's almost like I feel like he's always making a comeback. I'm always excited for John Goodman, especially with some of the weight. I don't know if he had health problems or not, but there was some weight difference.
Yeah, he
difference.
Had like a massive weight loss a year or two ago.
Yeah, and it came back a bit. And so I'm, you know, not sure what the deal is with that, but I always feel like I'm cheering for him because he's such a talent.
Hmm. Yeah. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Now We're Talking, hosted by myself, Jeff Bryant, accompanied as always by Keith Kennedy on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Vancouver. And, you know, the show is evolving. Who knows? It's constantly evolving. Mm-hmm. It feels like this week the show is sort of an entertainment.
Yeah. Well, it was an entertainment week. It was an entertainment-y week.
You know what? And speaking of which, let's talk about what happened in the news this week.
Jeff and Keith present this week's news. Now a topical.
A lot of things happened in the news this week, Keith. Were you paying attention to some of the events, some of the headlines?
Not as much as I usually am. This was my wife's vacation this week.
Oh, that's right.
She was off for a week, so I was a little bit out. I actually took a break from the blog, Ask Keith Anything, at blogspot.com. Mm-hmm. You should go there.
Do it.
Yeah, I took a break from that for a few days, which is funny as a side note. I always lose like a ton of followers. A ton of readership if I take like 3 days off. Whatever however fickle my readership is.
You mean you
is,
can't get them back?
No, they'll come back.
Oh, okay.
They'll start coming back. But like if they don't, like every day when they're on the toilet, if I'm not there ready for them.
Fickle.
They just
you need
away.
Some new fans. I don't like the sounds
so
of those people.
I try to put up there like, hey, I'm taking a few days off. And then still I have to recover. Like I have to be better when I come back. I have to try hard.
Maybe there's a way to do a bunch of them and have like the internet release them
won't feel
for
authentic.
You. Right.
I'm a stickler for that. No one cares but me, but yeah. Anyway, so I was a little bit out of the loop.
Okay.
But I did watch some Olympics. That's one of the
things
I'm up
on. Did you hear about what happened with this Lochte character? That's a huge headline.
Yeah. I've been following that all along because I've been watching so much of the Olympics.
Yeah, for me with the Olympics, mm-hmm. I haven't been following at all. I have no idea who's winning what
came out
events
of it,
or whatever. But that's sort of a mainstream story in the news cycle that's happened this week.
And
that,
yeah, you know the whole thing that happened?
I think so. I mean, it's an ongoing story, but... Mm-hmm. Definitely doesn't put him in a good light at all.
Well,
puts him in a really bad light, actually.
Well, maybe I'll tell you what I heard, because I don't know if you know more than I do, but I think what happened was they went into a convenience store. Something.
This is what was revealed after the fact.
Yes, after the fact. So this, is, this is the whole story now.
Yeah.
But originally, they claimed that they were pulled over and stuck up.
By criminals impersonating police officers with mm-hmm. badges and drew their firearms.
Which is very elaborate.
And put a gun to his head.
Wow.
And said to him, get on the ground. And the other swimmers did.
Mm-hmm.
And he was so courageous.
Swimmers being prostrate
and such a proud, like, gold medal winning American that when this guy put a gun to his head and threatened to kill him, he said, I'm not going to do it, or something like that. He refused to do it.
So I didn't know that.
So basically he portrayed himself as
like
a very heroic
John Wayne
figure. And then the
John
truth
Wayne
comes
the
out. That none of those things happened.
Right.
There was nobody pretending to be police officers.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't pulled over.
Yeah, they were in a
convenience store.
And they did some damage in the bathroom.
They peed everywhere. They peed on the wall, which, I mean, I don't know if anybody judges them harshly for that. I mean, I pee on the wall all the time.
Well, if you're from America.
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty mean, I guess.
Or even if you're from anywhere. I don't know. I'm not swayed by the idea of somebody peeing on a wall.
You have dirty bathrooms, America.
I've peed too many times on too many walls to judge somebody for that.
Yeah.
But he did like tear down some poster or something.
Ah,
so that's kind of obnoxious.
Yeah.
But much more than that, it's just the fact that he had the gall to create this narrative, which reflects very poorly
mm-hmm.
on the host country and host city of the Olympics.
Yeah,
and it reveals... like a profound degree of immaturity.
Yeah, so that's the part of it that I found interesting as well, which is they came out, apparently the guy pulled a gun on them because they wouldn't pay for the damages or something. And to not just
that's unclear.
Yeah, all right. And so to not just come out and say, look, we were drunk, or we were being silly, or we like made a mess. We're sorry. It's not a big deal. That's so, like, take responsibility for that. Nobody's going to care. But to turn it around, to take something so minor that you could just fess up to and be a good human being and turn it all the way around to everything you just said, which is huge, ridiculous story.
Yeah.
Now you're a hero. Now Rio looks bad. Now it's taking away from the athletics and shining a light on all of that stuff that nobody wanted to shine a light on during the Olympics,
yeah.
Which may or may not, maybe that should be. yeah. right? You should be paying attention to all the poverty and everything that's going on down there. But obviously, they're trying to like put on a good show and say that you know their country still functions well and all that.
Well, if you're the police and your job is to protect the athletes, let's say,
yeah.
and one of them is who's won a gold medal and is some hotshot from America, who's already like, yeah, people down there, I think, are really upset about this, and I mean, I'm upset about it. But if there's a history of you being oppressed by American colonialism and imperialism, and then the white American swimmer with his gold medals
and his dyed blue hair
is making shit up about how he was victimized and he wasn't. It's outrageous. He's lucky that he got out of there when he did because people would have taken an opportunity probably if it's on.
I don't
to throw him in a pool is what I'm saying. They would have thrown him into a pool.
And what would he have done then?
Exactly.
Except excelled.
Except just excel at treading water.
Yeah, that's what I would have done if I'd been asked.
In that water and tread, boy.
Yeah. If I was there covering that story, I would have just asked him those kinds of questions. Like, why didn't you swim out of there? Microphone in the face.
Yeah. Yeah.
But couldn't you have just swam?
Yeah.
See how fast it takes him to lose his cool then. And then the real story comes out. That's probably what they did in the interrogation room. But I thought you were a swimmer, they said. And he got so frustrated that he was being painted into the corner as one thing.
Yeah.
He's like, no, I'm an American.
Don't you marginalize me. I'm a swimmer and an American.
Yeah.
Anyway, that happened this week. And the details of that are still forthcoming. And I don't know. Maybe I'm just in the mood that I'm in. But I'm just like, screw this guy. Mm. Like, it's interesting, you know, maybe a larger conversation that can be had about this is it a good thing or a bad thing that somebody can be crucified on social media and in the public consciousness for mistakes that they make? Because when somebody is a fucking dipshit like this guy and he can be crucified, that feels like justice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're waiting for him to be extradited back to Brazil and to face some sort of punishment through the judicial process, that's not going to happen. So to see the sort of instant karma of people around the world recognizing him for what he is, that feels like a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the flip side to that is like there's this, I can feel it in myself, there's this lust for him to be crucified. I don't even know the guy.
Yeah.
And so you think, well, what about situations where somebody actually hasn't done something wrong? And the situation's been misconstrued, and then they're crucified and ostracized.
Well, that's exactly what I was thinking. Like, the way social media works now, it kind of turns us all into 9-year-olds. Like, that thing when you're a kid, you're so afraid of being in trouble, and you're so afraid of being caught doing something wrong, that in that situation, he's probably thinking that. He's going, oh, my God, we just got caught doing something silly, and now we're going to look so terrible. I'll lose all my followers on Twitter and the media will make me look bad. So I have to make up a story. I have to act as a child would and say, oh no, I didn't steal the cookies. And then they go, well, what did happen? And then they go, the dog did. And you're like, we don't have a dog. It's like, I bought a dog. And then before you know it, this crazy story unfolds. And if it was a child, you'd be like, I get it. But it makes you wonder, what is that? What's his mentality? Is he a mature human being? Just because he's an athlete doesn't mean that he can handle all that fame and all that situation.
It gives the impression of somebody who thinks that they can get away with something.
You know? And I don't know if it's that or if it's his own stupidity or it's the fact that, like we said, social media is so damning now that everyone wants to crucify everyone. And so maybe we're creating a whole new layer of or maybe new generation of fabulous liars so that we cannot be responsible, which is scary on top of the lack of responsibility that comes along with social media participation anyway, that anonymity, right?
Yeah, it's interesting just to think about surveillance and, you know, which is increasingly becoming, what's the word I'm looking for? Omnipresent?
Mm-hmm.
It's everywhere, ubiquitous. How about that?
And, all right, ubiquitous is fine, I guess.
Omnipresent just isn't satisfying.
Omnipresent is the kind of word that sounds like we're always pronouncing it wrong. Like it should be omnipresent or something.
Yeah, in order to sound more interesting and more
like
cultured.
Omnipresent sounds like you jammed two words together for the first time.
It sounds like you're making up a word, and it's not a very impressive word.
Yeah.
No, it's ubiquitous and increasingly so. And that combined with accountability, you know, it's almost, it's more of a threat to somebody's well-being if they're punished in the court of public opinion than in the law courts. Because oftentimes it feels like when people make mistakes in life, they just get a slap on the wrist.
Yeah, especially if you were a celebrity, you could just pay the right people or have the right lawyers and no one would ever know. Now it's the opposite.
And it can fall by, the point is it can fall by the wayside. Like you pay the fine, maybe you do a little bit of jail time depending on what the thing is, but it will go away. Mm-hmm. Whereas the internet's permanent and like there's no way this guy will, if for the rest of his life and beyond, when people look up who is this guy on Wikipedia, mm-hmm. that will always be accounted for.
And people when they...
And some people when you look them up in Wikipedia, like Danny Glover, I mean, I haven't done it recently because I just assume he's still alive.
I could smell the Danny Glover coming back in the room.
But if you went through, his Wikipedia entry, it may or may not say anything beyond, you know, the movies he's made, why he got into movies, where he was born, just sort of that encyclopedic information.
Yeah.
But increasingly, if you make a mistake like that, it's certainly going to be accounted for in that entry. And so I wonder, moving forward in the future, with more ubiquitous surveillance and just the more accountability, I wonder whether people will get to have internet profiles, let's say on Wikipedia, where they're, it's unblemished. Because everybody's making mistakes in their lives.
Yeah.
It's just not accounted
for. No, it's just,
The point is I can't decide whether it's a good thing or a bad thing because it's really easy. My tendency is to come from the side of it that fears the loss of, you know, civil liberties and privacy. That's I feel like that's where I've been oriented from. Now I feel like I'm shifting to the other side of it, which is I see people getting away with things so much that I'm almost like, I'm almost willing to make a deal with the devil and say, let's just like game on.
Well, I think that's, I don't even think it's a deal with the devil. I think once, you know, you can push someone into the mud and laugh at them, but once you're muddy, then everybody's muddy. And what it comes down to is at some point in the future, everyone's Wikipedia page will be peppered with all of the real bad things they've done. And then there's no glass houses left to throw stones at.
And that would be a good thing?
Well, that would be,
if we could get to
that
the
would
absolute.
Be the positive at the end of all the bad things is that if, you know, as long as there are people who are trying to hold on to that privacy, then
the question
there
is,
will be two different classes.
Can that happen before we all become robotic anyway?
Probably not.
It's a race.
I think it's the robots who will decide this.
Right.
No, but I think that's a real thing. I think if once people get used to the idea that you have no privacy left, then that thing where you're like, oh, maybe he beat his wife. That's a horrible thing. But it's like, well, this guy did these horrible things. And so you start judging everybody on the worst thing.
So do you think that
maybe that's a problem unto itself?
If everybody was surveilled, is the truth that everybody is equally abhorrent? Or do you think there is a spectrum of behavior?
I think there is a spectrum of behavior. I just think that when the data gets that grandiose, everyone kind of seems like they're all the same.
Well, but what if one guy's murdering people and the other guy...
Well, that's like I was just actually...
The other guy doesn't wash his hands after
he pees. I was actually just getting to that. I was, because the idea that, like I said, wife beating or something, when you get to a point where it's you're so saturated with information that includes all the negative, then you stop being... you stop making those differentiations as much. If everyone has all their stuff up there, you go, well, everyone's good and bad. And then you do... miss out on the idea that we shouldn't let that guy murder people. That could be a real thing, but the robots will take care of it. They'll murder us.
That's how this will all be resolved.
They'll murder us.
I don't know. I was watching a British show called Caught on Camera, and it's just it's just reveals all these situations. I mean, CCTV in the UK has always been pervasive, much more than anywhere else in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. That's probably for a variety of reasons. Part of it is it's a smaller country, I think, so it's easier to surveil.
Like a camera takes more of it?
Yeah, just that it's easier to have more coverage of more of their population based on this logistically.
They just need 9 rainproof cameras.
Yeah, that's all it takes.
Yeah.
But they do. They have a much, much higher ratio of CCTV cameras in public than anywhere else in the world, combined with people having their own cameras and shops and stuff. So the show just shows all these situations where people are, particularly on the high streets, like in the sort of downtown area of some of the towns and stuff. You can, when somebody commits a crime, like assaulting somebody else, it's caught on camera, and then the camera operator can track their movement from one shot to the next to the next until the police...
Mm-hmm.
capture them.
Like in a Jason Bourne movie.
And arrest them. And that's very satisfying. Like when you're watching some guy you know, they're coming out of a bar or something and he just starts assaulting somebody, like it really offends your sense of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that somebody could do that and just walk away is offensive.
Yeah.
So it's very satisfying to see somebody be like, okay, this guy's doing this. They call somebody and something is done about it is very appealing. So after watching many hours of this happening, I really noticed for myself, like it's really, I'm so fixated on how it's a solution to a problem,
mm-hmm.
or how it improves a problem, which is people being held accountable for bad behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Then when I start to think about like Snowden or something, I'm like, oh yeah, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of affects all of those fears that I have about Big Brother and government surveillance and it being those technologies being abused. So I don't know. I guess what I'm saying is, they should force people to watch episodes of Caught on Camera more if they want to brainwash people into buying into government surveillance.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I just like when I think about people being critical of that, I don't know. I just find my perspective is radically shifted to like grow up. Like it's so easy to be critical of that if you're not a victim.
Mm-hmm.
But if somebody you loved or cared about was a victim of a crime like that, you'd be pretty glad
mm-hmm.
if there was some accountability and pretty frustrated. If you're like, oh, there's nothing we can do.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I'm just curious when I think about that and the emotions that it triggers it. And again, coming back to what we talked about before with this Lochte guy, like I'm just like, burn this to the ground, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But that's a scary road to go down.
Yeah, I think what's better is just to, we'll just call every time someone makes up a ridiculous story a Lochte from now on. Right? Like if someone's like, hey, Danny Glover had a really, really extensive
career.
Whatever
happened to Lochte? He became a Danny Glover.
Danny Glover had an extensive career after Predator 2, and he did really well. Are you Lochte-ing me right now?
Danny Glover is going to become, or sorry, Lochte is going to become the Danny Glover of swimming.
Yeah. We'll be like, wasn't he in like Swimming 2?
Swimming 2.
How's that for a joke?
Meet you in the pool. Back to the pool. Swimming 2, back to the pool.
Nice.
So that happened this week in the news. What else happened? Anything else happened?
Oh, yeah, we're doing that thing.
Yeah.
Tragically Hip.
Tragically Hip.
They had their big concert last night.
Yeah.
Their big going away concert. I don't mm-hmm. know what that's for. Everything seems fine. I'm not sure what's going on there.
Yeah.
That's a little joke. He's dying of cancer.
He is dying of cancer. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of people,
brain cancer,
a lot of people
right?
know that.
Yeah.
Everybody I believe
does.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So did his last show. Was it the last show or is it just like the televised show and there's still a few more? I was confused about that.
No, it's the final show.
That was the final one?
That's the event, is that they did a brief summer tour across the
right.
country
and
in selected markets. And then they brought it all back home, which is where they came from, Kingston.
Mm-hmm.
And the final show was televised and that was it. But pretty unprecedented because, you know, there's a lot of supposed farewell tours of bands
who
then 2 years later are playing in a local casino. But I'm not sure how many genuine farewell tours there have been. I'm not aware of any. There's actually, interestingly, the only other one I can think of is Spirit of the West,
which is that documentary, right?
And it's interestingly enough, they're also a Canadian band who are maybe on a sort of similar level of notoriety or somewhat similar, maybe approaching the level of notoriety of Tragically Hip and similar age group.
Yeah.
And it's their lead singer and who also had health issues. And that's another situation where they had a tour a few months ago and they knew it was there. But I can't think of beyond Canada. I can't think of any other stories of famous bands.
No, I couldn't either. That was the most poignant thing about it for me was there were moments throughout the concert where I just thought, this is so rare. And I kept thinking of him. I don't know why. Maybe because it was about him and he's the central figure of that band anyway. But I just kept thinking, what is this like for him to know that this is a real farewell? To know that you're going to die, to be dealing with that mortality and doing this one last time. But in a way, what you're saying is just as interesting, is what's that like to experience that externally, that this is a real farewell tour? There's no coming back.
I think it's gotten to the point where that term, farewell tour, is so thrown away,
it means
so nothing. Abused. I don't think anybody has gone to a farewell tour in recent memory and actually gone to that show thinking, wow, they're definitely never going to play
it's
music
again.
It's like
a going out of business sign or something. It doesn't mean anything anymore.
At a mattress store.
Yeah. So that's Ozzy Osbourne, like Black Sabbath has had like a million. Kiss have had like a million farewell tours. And then they just have reunion tours and comeback tours and they do it again.
It's become a cliche. I don't know when that began.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it gained steam maybe like 10, 15 years ago. Like you started to see it happen more. I think the Eagles played a role in that. The Eagles famously said that they would never play together again.
Yeah.
And then I think it was in the early 80s. And then in the early to mid 90s, they had a tour called Hell Freezes Over.
Right.
And that was, and they made a lot of money.
Yeah.
They made a lot of money. They kind of modernized the modern concert tour and made it much more profitable. They started like, whereas tickets used to cost maybe $20, $40, $60, $80, $100, suddenly tickets cost like $200, $300, $400, $500 because they realized that their demographic had enough money.
Right.
They could pay
and
that.
They built up
and
all
they
this
would.
Drama. Yeah.
So they, you know, a lot of people were outraged that a show would charge that much for tickets, but they knew that enough people were willing to pay $500 that they could. And once that happened, that started to spill over to all the other major nostalgia acts like Paul McCartney, I think, and the Stones. And suddenly it's just kind of normalized the idea of paying $200 or $300 or $400 to go see Usher, which is a little bit ridiculous.
Yeah, but we'll do it because this is the last time.
Yeah, so I think that played a role in people saying, oh, if we say this is our last tour, we can actually charge a lot more money. Mm-hmm. We can, and then they kind of saw how when a band recanted on that, people were so relieved to see them again that they were more than forgiving. They were just so excited to see them again.
And plus, a lot of these big bands have enough fans that you could probably piss off every single person in that place and still fill it again the next time you come to town.
It's true, because even if you do a world tour and it's the biggest tour ever, you're maybe going to play to 2 or 3 or 4 million people. That's if it's a massive world tour. And that's a very small percentage of the global population.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, so, do you think you could...
So it can still be a niche product.
Yeah. But last night was interesting, man. I thought it almost felt like, I don't know what the word is, like a crowning or a knighting for the Tragically Hip as Canada's
band. A coronation.
There you go. Crowning?
Well, it's...
You know,
same
it was like watching a child be born.
Yeah.
Except the opposite of that. Yeah, I thought it was... They were just like, this is Canada's band. And if you didn't know it, you knew it then. And I had never thought of that before, but when you make the case that the Tragically Hip are Canada's band, I don't have a counter argument.
You know, it's interesting to think about them being Canada's band, because for me, their music influenced me for sure, especially like a lot of people. I think there's a certain era for me. It was the late 80s and early 90s, the albums around then that I listened to a lot.
Road Apples Up to Here.
And,
that kind of stuff.
And then certainly post Phantom Power came out in 1998. I listened to that album a lot. Subsequent to that, I didn't really notice their music or hear their music. For full disclosure, I mean, I was a fan of their music and I was into it. But, I when I see all this rhetoric about how they're Canada's band, I think, maybe for, like, white people aged 40 to 60, males aged 40 to 62. But if we're honest, like, does their music really reflect the taste of the average Canadian? I think that there's a certain, again, talking about niche, I think there's a certain subset of Canadians who are hugely passionate about them and turn up the volume on that narrative.
Yeah.
But I think that there's probably a lot more Canadians that are into Drake than the Tragically Hip. And I'm not saying whether that's right or wrong, or Justin Bieber for that matter.
Yeah.
But if you did a poll, like how many people even know who the Tragically Hip are under a certain age? They're probably much more enthusiastic about Drake and Justin Bieber. Mm-hmm. I mean, I saw some things of some like old white dads in their 40s and 50s, like talking like when they're watching the show, like saw some social media stuff, like watching, like introducing my kids to the Hip, like, and really kind of like giving the impression they believe this is a special moment for the kids as much as for them. I'm like, your kids, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But that's not how it works. They don't, you can't explain. It just gives me the impression of a dad who's like, check, you got, it's called Road Apples. You got, let's jam it out. Like, just getting the guitars. We've got to dust these off and restring them. Dad, I just want to listen to beats. So I don't know. Is it Canada's band? I think that implies the majority of Canadians know who they are and love them, and I don't think that's at all true.
Maybe it would be more fair to say they're...
But you're not allowed to say these things. I have to say this, too. It's like, I feel like there's such a, like, it feels so controversial...
Stigma.
To oppose the narrative, which is that it's a beautiful thing, it was a glorious coronation last night, and they're Canada's band. If you oppose it, you really run the risk
of
coming back
to
this idea of being crucified.
Yep.
If people generally don't listen to this show. Some people do, and I'm glad that they do. And who knows, maybe they're quote-unquote social influencers, and they'll tip it off. Although we're speaking, and that's harder to retweet than something that I type. But even if I express an opinion like, no, they're not Canada's band, that's overstated, and actually I thought that his performance wasn't very good last night, that's not necessarily a horrible thing to say, because I'm not taking away from the fact that they're a good band, they've done some good things.
And you're also a fan. Yeah.
But if that opposes the narrative, especially if I say I thought his voice sounded pretty weak last night, that is
people don't want to hear it.
Wasn't work with the narrative.
Yeah.
And this could be, I could be Locktified, you know,
yeah,
for that.
You could be Glovered.
So in the interest of not being Locktified or Glovered, I don't believe any of those things. I believe it's Canada's band, and he sounded like an angel.
And I would like to put in as well that I also think all the things that you people think.
Yep.
And I don't want you to hate me. I want you to send me presents.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's how I'm going to live.
It is interesting, though. Like, talking on the radio or a podcast is one thing. Again, I think if there was a certain degree of listenership, there's somehow what probably something we say could be turned into a meme. And people would share that.
A little snippet.
But the truth is, the way that people are held accountable for things they say on the internet is usually video or tweeting. Mm-hmm.
This is because
those are the things that you can quickly digest or quickly digestible.
Mm-hmm. I think that you might have just dug our grave for us. I think people are going to now. Oh, they think.
Like, how are we going to get them?
How are we going to get them?
Oh, we'll meme them.
Yeah. They're going to clip from the memeify radio. No, they'll find a way. They'll find a way to hurt us.
But with Twitter in particular, it's like, it's one thing for me to express some of those ideas here. But if you had a readership of your Twitter account and you just made one of those statements in a succinct way.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. It's what's happening more. I'm noticing too. It's not just people making statements that are deemed controversial and people sharing it and it becoming a news item. Now, are you hearing about this? I'm hearing more and more where somebody retroactively, will be called out.
Oh, like someone will find something from their past.
Yeah. And I heard about it. I've heard about it here, but now it's becoming a thing where somebody won't like a person and they haven't done anything of late that's controversial, but they think, I bet at some point they said something.
Yeah.
And they'll
Debbie Harry can't be clean.
They'll go through, at this point, people have years and years of tweets.
Yeah.
And that might be thousands and thousands of tweets. And they'll maybe manage to find something. I think this is happening where people are becoming more media savvy and perhaps a little bit more restrained in the opinions they offer now.
You have to go apologize.
But maybe when they
were
using Twitter in 2009, they weren't thinking those terms because that's a long time ago. A lot's changed. So that happened with that country dude, Blake Shelton.
Oh,
the
really?
Guy who's dating Gwen Stefani. I don't know much about
him. I haven't heard about
this. But the impression I have of him is people think he's a really sweet guy. Sure, he plays country music.
He seems like a fun
guy. But that doesn't mean he's a brain-dead hick or a racist or a bigot.
And he's funny, too, which helps.
Yeah, and so people have this great... That's funny you say that because somebody went back a few years and he had all these comments which are really distasteful. Like,
really?
Oh, yeah. This,
I haven't heard anything about this.
A few comments that he made that were...
Am I going to have to burn off my Blake Shelton tattoo?
I don't know. And a lot of people are probably asking this this question. At least laser
it off.
I'll
start flaying myself.
Don't cut it off. Don't be impulsive.
I'll do what I want.
maybe after you hear this, you will. I don't remember exactly what was said, but it was basically just like he was at a Starbucks in L.A. and the guy in front of him ordered a certain drink and he labeled him a homosexual. But the way that he did it, and there's a few other comments where... It just comes across as somebody who just straight up has a problem with homosexuals and is like kind of repulsed by the fact that they encountered one. That's how it comes across. And so he apologized for this. And in his apology, the way that he kind of justified some of the things he said was, oh, it's just my sense of humor, which is like for some people that might work as an apology.
Yeah.
But for other, it kind of just reinforces the idea that his opinion is that that's funny. So I don't know if that's now... Because of Lochte, he's been saved by Lochte, and it's been diminished in the news cycle.
Which is another use of the verb to Lochte,
it's versatile.
The spotlight off of someone else.
But regardless of that particular guy and what he said, I don't even really care about that. I'm just saying it made me think, well, this is interesting. You're going to see more and more of this.
Oh, totally.
Not just people who are currently very famous and like, oh, last week Blake Shelton said he hates black people or something, but 7 years ago. So really, like, what a lot of these celebrities should be doing is they should be deleting all of their old tweets because there's just very little to gain and a lot to lose in terms of their PR.
You just got to air miles that stuff, man. Like retroactively kill everything from 5 years before.
Yeah, do you want to be Loctified or do you want to air miles it?
You want to air miles it, for sure.
And that's up to you.
Well, it's funny because we're going to get to a point where there will be a whole generation that did everything on the internet. Like, it's one thing for Blake Shelton, however old he is, 40, 45,
exactly.
to dealing with this. But, you know, 20 years, everyone's going to have things like, well, oh, you said this when you were 18, so now you can't have this job.
And video of you saying it.
Yeah, yeah.
Video.
CCTV cameras following you around.
CCTV cameras, body cameras, drone cameras, people's phone cameras.
Yeah.
The thing is, it's not even going to be people being surveilled. People are going to create these problems for themselves.
Totally. Well, people are already like just putting their whole lives on the internet.
Yeah. It has just begun. We've talked in the past about technology, and we've kind of, in a way, skirted around this topic. But now we're going skirts up. We're going straight in.
Skirts up.
I don't know why I would say when I say we skirted
never heard that.
When I say we skirted around it, it sounds like we were being tentative. No, but we've talked about this before, and it is an interesting thought because when these things happen, I realize it's only just beginning. And coming back to the idea of accountability, I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing.
Yeah. Can I tangent and share with
you? Well, you know, again, we're expressing some opinions in this conversation. And it would be kind of dumb for me to not recognize how it's a bad thing, because that right now I'm pretty confident that we're not going to get in trouble, quote unquote, for anything we're discussing in this conversation. But it's going to be recorded. It's being recorded. It will be forever available in perpetuity. And if you become the next George R.R. Martin and I become the next George Martin, then maybe somebody will go through everything that we ever said or did. And they'll be, oh, it sounds like Jeff was endorsing bigotry. No, I wasn't. I was making a point against bigotry. You misunderstand.
Well, that's the problem. You can always take things out of context. I know that that's a defense that people use when you want to crucify them. They go, oh, that was taken out of context. That does happen. And anybody who wants to crucify you without enough knowledge of who you are as a person, they're going to do it. There's nothing you can do about it. No matter what you say, it doesn't matter. So it's just one of those things, man. If you open your mouth, then someone can take it the wrong way. It's collateral damage.
It's making me feel like I don't want to open my mouth. It's making me feel like I don't want to be on social media. I don't want to be more well-known than I already am. Like, it may be some people have always had the good sense to not want celebrity, but for me, you know, as at times in the past, an aspiring musician and other things I've done, the whole point, and even doing this show, the point is you want people to pay attention. But I'm kind of getting the point now where I feel like it's almost getting to the point where you're dumb if you want that. It's almost, you could make an argument, and I'm not saying it's definitely true, but you could make an argument that if you want to be more well-known, you're dumb because it's actually anonymity is the new celebrity.
It's the new minority.
If you kind of think of it visually on a graph or something, celebrity was always, notoriety was very unique, and along with it came a lot of privilege and wealth or something. But at some point, the balance is tipping, like 15 minutes of fame, how that's materialized now in a way nobody anticipated when that was first discussed as an idea. Everybody is kind of getting their 15 minutes of fame. It's almost like the premium is on going to ultimately be placed on anonymity.
Well, it's hard for me because I'm totally the opposite way. Like, I don't want to shut up and I don't want to not say things. I mean, I'm the kind of comedic personality when I do that kind of stuff, that kind of work, who believes that everything is okay to joke about.
And you've never suffered for it, though.
No, but it is something in my head that I've, if I was to make it as an author, which is my ultimate goal, then the comedic side of me doesn't vibe with that persona of whatever that persona needs to be, whatever people think an author is. I know as a writer that we're all different. But the idea that if you want to have a brand and sell lots of books, you maybe shouldn't make that off-color joke on your blog or whatever. And I just don't believe that. I think that, again, you have to still be brave in the face of all these things. I mean, obviously, if making a brand for yourself or making money in that narcissistic way isn't part of your life, then so be it. Maybe it is better to get off all that stuff and keep your life private. But if a section of your life is trying to entertain people, I think you kind of got to go all in. And So for me, yeah, I worry that people will get the wrong impression. And when I'm when I say something or write something, and my whole mission is to make people laugh, and then that one person goes, "Well, you made me sad." Well, I can take that as collateral damage. But if I was famous, and everything that was coming back at me was, "You're a jerk and you're a piece of crap and you shouldn't make that kind of joke."
And people were yelling insults at your wife every day on the streets.
Yeah, well, that would be a different thing. I have no idea how I personally would respond to that. That would be horrible. I've seen some people recently respond to that.
The irony is that when people suffer that, it probably turns them into recluses. Mm-hmm. Where it's like they could just be reclusive in the first
place. To begin
place.
With, I could see that. Leslie Jones had a lot of hate spewed at her on the internet recently because of the Ghostbusters movie and things like that. And she just did what a lot of people do and kind of took a break from it and then thought, well, I'm not going to let this stop me. This is ridiculous.
She did the reunion tour. She's like, I'm leaving forever. And then 3 days later, she's like, I'm back and I've got more followers.
Back, baby.
I wonder how many more followers she had when she came back after she quit Twitter. Probably a lot more.
Yeah, probably. So I don't know. I think that you got to be yourself to be happy. If part of yourself is public, I think that would suck to not be able to be yourself. And yet everyone's going to deal with that differently. I don't know. I hate watching guys say things that get in trouble and they feel like they have to apologize for them. Sometimes maybe they were horrible things and they should apologize. Should they be apologizing to me while I'm watching a talk show? No, that's not really who they should be accountable to. And yet we make it that way. We make it, you have to make a big production out of your apology so we can all say you're an okay person. Who are we to judge that person in the first place?
Well, it's like a corporation, right? It's like they become they are brands.
Right, yeah.
They are corporations.
They're branded
in a sense, they
extent.
Are like a corporation. And that apology is
to
very
keep
much
the shareholders
it's
happy.
It's a PR thing.
Yeah.
It's a PR thing.
For
and
sure.
You see a lot of guys like this jackass Lochte guy kind of doing the apology where they're hoping it will make the story go away without actually taking accountability for what they did.
Mm-hmm, yeah,
and then that can really blow up in your face. And people are learning that too. It's like they're tempted to do the half-ass apology to make the problem go away.
Mm-hmm.
But if they do it too half-assed, it might actually fan the flames. And that's what's happened for him. Is he had these, I think he's had two different apologies in the last few days, which are meant, basically you can tell, it's just a very deliberate attempt to offer up as little as possible, to not admit to any wrongdoing.
Right.
Oh, he said that he did it, but it's just made it worse.
Yeah, it's too bad because responsibility.
Because it just reinforces that he's a jackass.
Yeah, and responsibility is key. I mean, to be a good person, a likable person, to be able to be transparent and vulnerable in that way where people can really know who you are, responsibility is great. I you really like those people. I don't know if I said this on the radio before, but sort of an adage that I have in my mind a lot, which is if someone does something wrong and you need to solve that problem, them saying I didn't do anything is just putting you further away from solving the problem. If you go, who left this mess out? And someone goes, I don't know, Steve did maybe. That doesn't help. But if you go, oh, that was me. You go, why did you do that? Here, oh, can we clean it up?
And Steve put a gun to my head.
Yeah, but you start moving forward as soon as someone takes responsibility. And very rarely do you take the time to say you're a bad person or you're a jerk for doing that wrong thing. We've all done bad things. We've all done stupid things. Taking responsibility is a strength, not weakness.
Well, and if he believed that to be true, then he would have come out with a strong admission of guilt or, of complicity in telling lies.
Yeah. I think for me, it goes back to what I was saying about the comedy thing, where I think you inherently take responsibility for the jokes you make. And I think a lot of comedians, just by doing their acts and being open to what they make fun of, sort of put that out there. They go, look, this is what we do. There's going to be collateral damage, but we are taking responsibility for what we say. And you'll hear a lot of comedians who will never say, I won't make those kinds of jokes. But if they know someone was offended by that, they'll go, well, sorry, of course, my purpose was not to offend you.
See, it's really interesting.
My purpose is to make all of these people laugh.
See, it gets even more interesting when you get into the comedy land territory.
It's just a place where it's most emblazoned.
A lot
of
comedians, understandably, are very off-put by the culture of apologizing. Because,
of course, because they're the ones who get the finger pointed.
In a way, it can be interpreted as a form of censorship. And if you're an artist who wants to express ideas, naturally you're going to be very offended by it. And I think that's... that's something that's happened recently too. There was, I don't know a lot about it, but there was some dude who was a comedian in New York City, and he was banned from UCB, and then it was kind of a cascading effect where other comedy clubs in New York were like, oh, UCB banned him? Okay, well, we don't know what's going on. We'll ban him too.
Wow.
And ultimately, I mean, I don't know what the deal is, but there had been a fellow comedian who had accused him of, I don't think it was outright sexual assault, but something that implied that. For all I know, he did that. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But then there were a couple others that were like, oh, I've had problems with him too. And rather than him, you know, being charged with a crime and having the opportunity to be defended in a court of law, mm-hmm. and hopefully if everything is done correctly, either his guilt is proven or his innocence is proven, mm-hmm. There was enough heat on this guy, they just banned him.
Yeah.
So another comedian was really offended by that,
mm-hmm.
and wrote this diatribe on Facebook where he kind of sarcastically, his point seemed to be that, you know, he was really disgusted by the idea that this guy doesn't get the opportunity to be judged through a process,
mm-hmm.
and he's just like, right away he's guilty because people said so.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was a writer for Amy Schumer's TV show.
Yeah.
So once there was a lot of heat on this guy, then Amy Schumer was getting a lot of heat that she had anything to do with this guy.
Yeah.
Because the narrative is these guys are like horrible rapey guys.
Mm-hmm.
And she
goes up the food chain to the most famous person.
She's supposed to hold up some ideals of liberalism or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so it got to the point where she basically like initially was saying that he was her friend.
Yeah.
And ultimately she's just like, forget this guy. Mm-hmm. She just like threw him under the bus or whatever. And it was like, I wonder what this is like in the comedy world, because who knows if that guy has committed sexual assaults. Again, come back to our conversation earlier, maybe it's a good thing he was ostracized without getting away with it, like I'm sure a lot of rapey people do.
Mm-hmm.
I accept that that's probably typically is the case. Maybe then it's a good story.
Mm-hmm.
But what if he didn't do
those
things? What if that person was a jilted lover or something?
Well, the problem with the ostracization, is that a word?
Ostracization.
The problem with him being ostracized there is it almost takes the heat off of him, whereas what should be happening is it should be being investigated. Like if a woman says, this person sexually assaulted me, that should...
And the opposing argument to that is that it's ignorant for men to suggest that these things should be investigated, because it implies that we don't understand that mm-hmm. that rarely is an effective means to solving the problem. So, yeah, I don't know. Another version of that question of, is it a good thing or a bad thing that somebody can just like be written off very quickly using the internet as a weapon?
Because
mm-hmm. If it was in the hands of somebody who was spiteful,
mm-hmm.
then you could really destroy somebody.
Yeah.
Folks, you're just listening to Now We're Talking on 101.9 FM on CITR. We're exploring some interesting conversational threads. Never sure where they're going to go. We're basically talking about what happened in the news this week. It's been a protracted conversation about what happened in the news. Keith, we have some time left. Did you want to do this week's edition of Ask Keith Anything? I see I've got some notes there. Or did you want to talk about anything? What's in the notes? What do you have on the cue cards?
Whistler.
Okay, let's talk Whistler.
Yeah, I went to Whistler.
So you went to Whistler, first time.
Yeah.
With your wife.
Yep. Me and the missus.
And you guys did something which I've never done before, which is you wrote a, was it a quad, an all-terrain vehicle?
An ATV, yeah.
Is that your first time on a motorbike of some description? Motorbiking? Scooter?
Yeah.
Motorcycle?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it was.
Moped.
I think of myself on a motorcycle a lot, but I don't think I've ever actually been on one.
Really? How often?
Do I think of it?
Yeah.
Once a day.
Wow. Well, so what was it like to finally straddle the seat?
Yeah.
Throw that leg over and rev the throttle?
It was as good as I expected.
It was, eh? Did you wear leather?
I usually do.
Mm-hmm.
No, not this time.
Leather underpants.
I loved it. I thought it was great.
So you went up the mountain?
Yeah, it's funny because I come from a place where everyone has ATVs and snowmobiles, but I left before I was old enough to really experience any of those. So I had a blast. It was much more difficult than I thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
I took to it fairly quickly, but I was surprised. I mean, they made us sign this huge waiver to do it. So I guess, and they told you me to
like
read it.
Like a scroll on parchment,
yeah.
The way that you're acting it out
like
right
someone
now.
Someone blew like a horn before they gave it to us.
a flugelhorn?
The waiver.
The sucker signed the waiver. We're going to fleece him for everything.
So obviously I didn't read it because...
Too much.
Yeah. But they were like, read it. And I was like, whatever. And then, but that's why they get you to sign it, because this thing can tip over and murder you. Wow. Or toss you off the you know.
Yeah, like riding a motorcycle. I get it. There's four wheels, but yeah. Still, it's a motorcycle for the first time up a mountain. That sounds a little bit comical.
Let me interject and say I had a wonderful experience, and these people were really professional. The guide was great. So obviously, I'm not saying don't go do this because you'll get thrown off the mountain. But for me and the experience, I was surprised. We went and practiced a little bit, and I just had this thought that not everyone could handle this. Not everyone is going to be able to lean. Like you have to. It's one of those things where you turn the bike. They encourage you to not just lean. But
tip
raise up and move to the left on your seat, you know, wow. Well, if you're turning left. And then you're the person in the if someone's sitting behind you, they have to lean as well. And then also when you're going up the trail, some of them are quite uneven. And so if the bike gets tipped up really far, you have to get to the high side of the bike to keep the weight on that
side.
So
you're not going on a ride. You're operating the machine.
Yeah. And so I could just imagine there are some people who just don't respond well to that. Some people aren't athletic in that way or they're not quick in that way.
Yep.
And I thought, wow. And I guess the worst that happens is people go really slow, I suppose, when they want to be careful. But for someone like me, I was trying to go do it as well as I could and go fast. And there was a few times where even on with the machine under control, I was like, wow, this is, you know, I just got some air, or like I just went really far to the right. But anyway, it was really fun. And we went all the way up and took like an hour all the way up the mountain and looked out over the lakes and all that good stuff.
So you kind of gradually go up, right? You're not like straight up, like, let's get fast as possible.
No. It's like, it's a big S curve.
Dirt roads.
Yeah, dirt roads.
But never too steep. It's gradual the whole way. There's never like a concern about tipping over and tumbling down.
No, nothing mountain. Like that. It's more just about the fact that some of the terrain itself is really rocky and pitted.
But still more dangerous than just driving around a flat parking lot?
By far.
Yeah.
Also, there was some, it was during Crankworx, this... not BMX, what's it called? Mountain biking
mm-hmm.
festival.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were some people around. Crankworx.
Oh, Crankworx.
No, Crankworx is what I did later when my arms were sore. And I got into the hot tub. But while we were driving up that mountain, there were some people on bikes and you had to like avoid them. And I kept thinking like, is everyone capable of this? Like, because I thought, you know, like I said, I thought I was really applying myself to do well.
Yeah.
So I thought if you just didn't take this seriously, you could fall off this bloody thing. Anyway, that's why they give the offer. You can either be a person who rides it or you can get on the back. Because my wife was a little unsure if she wanted to ride it herself. And even though she would have done well, she decided to sit on the back. And maybe that's why you have that option if you don't want to risk tossing yourself off a huge mountain.
Yeah, that's scary. That scares me.
But it was cool. I really had a good time. And what I want to talk about with Whistler, which I thought was interesting, and in the theme of what we've been talking about today, is some of these things that you can get in trouble for saying. I didn't like Whistler very much.
Okay.
It felt, this is going to be ridiculous.
You had some activities you didn't even enjoy, but Whistler itself,
the village, like this feeling, we were right in a hotel on the main strip of the village.
Yeah.
And so we spent a lot of time in that area. It didn't feel authentic to me.
Mm-hmm. It's like Disneyland.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Nancy, in fact, mentioned that it felt like Disneyland. And I did. It felt like someone had put up a stage built to look like a chalet or built to look like a place that you'd find near mountains in Europe or something.
Totally.
And what it really was like a million stores jammed into the tiniest area to take all of your money all the time.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, it was like a big mall. That's what I felt. I felt like I had to live in the mall for a few days.
Because you obviously have heard all about Whistler. You've lived in Vancouver for 15 years.
Yeah.
But having never been there, what was your idea? Was that more or less what you thought it would be, or did that come as a surprise?
I pictured more like, I think the cobblestone walkway thing was probably in my head, but I pictured like a normal street with some stores and more like downtown Vancouver. You know, whether that area, there's a few areas down there where there's just pedestrian traffic.
Yeah,
I've been to Europe a little bit, and I've seen some of those areas where there's pedestrian traffic. And
but it was like the section of Disneyland where you're in the resort for
like
the
like so many restaurants.
Yeah,
and
it's almost as like they're trying to make money from
it. Almost
tourists.
Is. Yeah, it's crazy. Well, that's what it was, and that's what it comes down to is it is a tourist trap. I don't know if the trap implies something negative.
You
but
got
I
out.
Did feel a little bit trapped for a few days.
Yeah,
and it helps to not.
Two
have,
days is good.
Yeah,
that's
it was.
Enough.
It's funny because when we first got there, I'm driving into the town before we got to that village part, and it was beautiful, and the drive, Sea to Sky Highway, was amazing, and I really, really enjoyed the drive, and I was thinking as we were going into the town, I wish we had another day, and then after one day, I was like, nah, that's a no.
Because you can always go back.
Yeah.
It's good to sort of, you know, be left wanting more.
Yeah, and it's only 2 hours away, so.
Rather than too much. Well, folks, if you've been tuning in to the show this week, you'll know we talked about a few things. Really, we kind of got into it. We started talking about entertainment and talking about Danny Glover, talking about his filmography that led to a conversation about Robert De Niro and Al Pacino. But quickly, I managed to guide the conversation towards some sort of philosophical musing about whether it's a good thing or a bad thing that we're becoming more and more accountable for the things we do and say.
Omnipresence.
Due to omnipresence and ubiquitousness. And we don't have the answer yet.
Hell no.
We're working on it. But that's what we talked about this week. We'll be back next week, as we always are, Sunday at 6 p.m. See you then.